This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. People from all over the world have come to Rome for today's Pope Francis funeral and procession are talking about their new lifetime memories.
A momentous occasion, absolutely fabulous that I'm here, and one I can remember forever and ever, and I have goosebumps.
Pope Francis recently said the war in Gaza created a deplorable humanitarian situation. In Gaza, because of an Israeli blockade, some children only have one meal a day, says the World Food Program's Gaza Emergency Coordinator Yasmin Meidani.
Without aid coming in, without the borders opening, it means that not just the food security, but the medical supplies, the shelter supplies, everything else that a person needs to have a dignified life and a dignified assistance is being impacted severely.
Talks about Iran's nuclear program today in Oman went well, say reps of the U.S. and Iran. This is ABC News. Luigi Mangione pleading not guilty to federal charges in the killing of UnitedHealthcare Chief Brian Thompson. Prosecutors declaring their intent to seek the death penalty. ABC News Chief Investigative Correspondent Aaron Katursky.
After Luigi Mangione pleaded not guilty to federal charges, his lawyers begin trying to stop federal prosecutors from pursuing the death penalty. Mangione's attorneys have called it barbaric, and they have until June to say why the government should not be allowed to seek his execution. Prosecutors have said Mangione deserves it for allegedly stalking and killing UnitedHealthcare Chief Executive Brian Thompson and for trying to provoke broad-based resistance to the victim's industry after investigators said they discovered words associated with insurance claims at the scene of the crime.
ABC's Aaron Katursky, a letter card penned by one of the Titanic's most well-known survivors from on board the ship days before it sank, has sold for the equivalent of about $400,000 U.S. at an auction in London. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
April is Global Volunteer Month. Wisconsin's volunteers are transforming our communities every day through their acts of service. Wondering how you can give back? Find the perfect volunteer opportunities at volunteerwisconsin.org or contact your local United Way or Volunteer Center. On volunteerwisconsin.org, you can filter opportunities by location, organization, cause, accessibility, and more to find your best fit. volunteerwisconsin.org is hosted by United Way of Wisconsin and Serve Wisconsin. Paid for by United Way of Wisconsin.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Check out my war plans. Pete Hegseth talking about first big strike against the Houthis in Yemen on Signal, two separate channels. Yes, the one you heard about before with the reporter on it. Oops-a-daisy. And now also his wife, his bro, and his lawyer who magically got hired by the Pentagon. This guy's judgment could not be worse. Do you think Hegseth should probably resign?
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. April is Financial Literacy Awareness Month. Here's Terry D.
Many households are still recovering from the economic impact of the pandemic. Creating a spending plan and identifying priorities is a good first step, advises Todd Christensen with the nonprofit Money Fit Financial. If you are considering buying a car or house or taking a vacation, he notes a budget is about more than dollars and cents.
Whatever it is that motivates you, set a purpose, is number one. Number two is not to start adding income. That's usually where people start, but you've got to prioritize expenses. If you don't prioritize them, you will inevitably have to start eliminating expenses anyway, and you'll go with your emotions rather than with the rational part of your brain.
Christensen sees cash, credit cards, and the popular Buy Now, Pay Later apps as convenient tools that consumers often misuse. It is this convenience that prompts human nature to kick in and encourage overspending. He suggests having two checking accounts, one for automatic bill payment, another for fund purchases, and a savings account for long and short-term goals. Christensen supports teaching kids good money management habits before they earn spending cash as teens by mowing lawns, babysitting, or doing chores. If they are not taught how to take care of small amounts of money as early as possible, he cautions, they will be terrible with larger amounts as adults.
That's Terry D. reporting for Public News Service. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. You're listening to Civic Media News.
enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy for tonight, a few showers and thunderstorms and lows in the mid-40s. Couple of raindrops tomorrow morning and again tomorrow evening. Mostly cloudy otherwise and a high in the mid-60s. More storms for Monday, severe weather possible. Currently at 62 degrees.
Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, join us next time. We'll take a look back at the entire draft for the Green Bay Packers and also major things ahead for Congress, including the future of Medicaid. Your calls as well. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for The Todd Alba Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. We go now to Matt Nair on Air. And this week, Jane and Greg were joined by Representative Lee Snodgrass to talk about the bill she recently introduced in the Wisconsin Assembly that would close the loophole that allowed Elon Musk to pay petition signers.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane, Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenoff. Coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up a little bit later on, in about 15 minutes, Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot will be here for a little weather and wine. Tell us what we can expect over the next couple of days. I was just outside. It is so nice out right now.
Let me guess, it's going to be rain and then sun and then rain and then sun and then locusts.
Whiplash weather coming up soon. Yes, and then we'll talk all things sports with the Acme Packing Company's Paul Noonan will be joining us after 11:30. We'll talk about the NFL draft, which is underway in Green Bay, and much, much more. Right now, though, very excited to welcome our next guest. Representative Lee Snodgrass from the 52nd is joining us. Good morning, Representative. Thanks for making time for us.
Good morning, Jane. I'm so happy to be here.
Let's talk about a new measure aimed at tightening up on, buying people's votes.
Yeah, so I was very excited to introduce a bill with Green Bay Rep, actually the 90th Assembly Rep, Ahmad Rivera-Wagner. This bill essentially kind of closes a loophole that we seem to have had that we didn't think we had to worry about, which is bribing people essentially to sign petitions during an election year. So when Elon Musk sort of changed his tune and said, I'm not paying people to vote, I'm just paying people to sign a petition, we knew we had to do something to clarify Wisconsin law so that that can't happen.
So what he did was not technically illegal.
You know, it's one of those things that skirts within the line, so to speak. He did change his language and said that he was not paying people to vote. But when you pay people to sign a petition that you then advertise as a way of collecting names to give away a huge check at a rally in support of a candidate, that seems kind of fishy to me. So we knew we needed to tighten that up.
What would this measure do, Representative Snodgrass?
Well, it would be during a campaign time, and a campaign time defined in the bill is when somebody can take out nomination signatures until the election day itself. So it would say within this campaign time, you cannot essentially incentivize somebody to sign or not sign a petition. So you think about something like, you know, what Elon Musk did, you think about a recall petition, you think those things. We wanted to make sure that we were keeping people's right to free speech, campaign window is very important. It also, just to clarify, it says something of value that used to be in state statute as anything more than a dollar. Mm-hmm. And then we realized, you know what, costs are going up. Some of those signs cost more than a dollar to produce. So we raised that to $5. So the bottom line is, if you cannot motivate people to come out and support your candidate on issues, on effort, on what they say they're going to accomplish, and you have to do it by motivating people with money, there's already a problem.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, I think we can all agree that this last election showed handily that the people of Wisconsin aren't going to fall for something like that. And resoundingly, too, just like the last Supreme Court election, a 10-point victory says that this state wants, we want fairness. We don't want your money.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, the biggest way that to see what people are feeling is the result of the polls, right? So we knew that this was something that people would want. We've had a lot of great feedback from it. Unfortunately, as with lots of things right now in Madison, it's going to be difficult to get Republican support on it. I just saw the bill draft came into my office. Not one Republican signed on to this. So this is my plea to them. I know you can't stand bribery as well. I know from talking to some of them individually that they're pretty fed up with campaign finance and we need to have some campaign finance reform. This is a great first step that most people should be able to agree on.
Are they just so afraid of blowback that they can't put their names on this?
I could certainly speculate. And I would say that the individuals who I would still consider pretty moderate are hesitant to speak up because I do think there's still threats from the president of the United States to put people into situations where they're up for re-election again and they're primaried. But at some point, I really love what Tim Walz used to say was that you don't hoard political capital or you don't build political capital to hoard it. Mm-hmm. You build it to burn it. And if ever there was a time, you guys, I mean, the world is on fire and democracy is at risk. Let's burn that political capital and do the right thing.
This is something we talk about on the show. Every time we see a bill come out of Madison that's bipartisan, we sing the praises on the highest mountain because it shows that the people in power can work together to move this state and its people forward. You know, whether it's expansion of Medicaid for new moms or other things we talk about, it's a bipartisan measure. Let's do it. You can take it back to your people and say, look what we did for you.
Right. Yeah, there used to be a small window last session. I felt like I had a great working relationship with Republican Rep. Scott Krug. He and I did have a lot of bipartisan bills that we worked on together on that committee. But I'm going to be honest with you. If anything, I feel the culture has shifted towards less working together this session. Mm. I feel like because we picked up 10 seats as the Democratic caucus, there's a lot of like, we'll show you. We're not going to play nice in the sandbox anymore. So while we all promised our constituents things would get better, it seems to me from personal experience that it's gotten a little worse.
Oh, great. We're all five now. That's just dandy.
Representative, one of the things that when you were on the show last a while ago, too, one of the things you talked about you were running was knocking on the doors and getting out there and meeting the people and meeting all of the people, regardless of who they vote for, and having what I think is important to have during any tenure in office is good conversations, even with those who disagree. What are you hearing from the people in your district about this measure and their support? I have to imagine there are people who probably voted for Donald Trump and be like, yeah, I don't like this either. The people, I feel like, have a different voice than maybe the politicians are voting for.
Yeah, actually, that, I'm really glad you asked that because as a relatively public figure, when I go about my day, I always run into people I know. And of course, they want to talk to me about my job. And I was at the grocery store the other day and this gentleman stopped me and he asked me if I was who I was. I said, yes. And he's like, hey, you got that bribery bill, huh? And I said, yep. I said, what do you think about it? And he's like, well, I didn't vote for you, but I like that bill. So, I mean, it does cross over.
Yes.
Nobody likes dishonesty. Nobody likes bribery. And Wisconsin showed that. So I don't understand what the resistance is for my Republican colleagues, but I'm gonna see if I can get some on board.
If you're just joining us, Representative Lee Snodgrass is here, and we're talking about a new measure aimed at shoring up state laws to prevent major political donors from just handing out checks to people who sign election-related petitions. As expected, someone on the live stream, yeah, I'll be more about this when the Democrats start condemning George Soros. It's always,
George Soros, that
poor guy, he gets labeled. I mean, man, the guy can't catch a break.
Bring out those greatest hits, folks.
But nobody mentions the U-lines. Nobody mentions the other major, Diane Hendrickson. Those GOP donors never come up. It's only George Soros on the left.
And to be fair,
I'd be happy to address that.
Okay, go ahead, please.
I will say, 100%. I'm sick of it too. Let's talk about Citizens United. We also had the same week we introduced our bill, my colleagues in Madison were introducing a bill to repeal Citizens United. I agree with my Republican colleagues. We need to get money out of politics. If I had my way, the state would say, this is what you get for each race. And if you can't win by spending that, then you probably are not a good budgeter of money and you shouldn't be in office anyway. I mean, I wish we could get to that point, honestly. And nobody needs that money.
And for clarification, and I hate saying this because it's just with Citizens United, it's just the truth of the matter. This bill seeks to get rid of the loophole.
Right.
If Diane Hendricks, George Soros, if whomever, me, wants to give hundreds of millions of dollars in legal ways of dark money, they can still do all of that. You're not making a law saying they can't. You're simply just saying this one thing where someone says, hey, sign this petition, and you might win a big golf check. That's what you're trying to get rid of. This has less to do with George Soros than it does with bribery.
Absolutely. My bill is micro-focused on this particular issue that, frankly, was not a problem until the last presidential election, and then we saw a repeat of that kind of tactic in the spring. Honestly, we didn't have billionaires trying to flip elections in Wisconsin until now in that particular way, so this is a micro-focused bill on that particular thing. In terms of broader finance reform, campaign finance reform, I am all open. If my Republican colleagues want to bring a bill forward on that, I'd be happy to work with them on that.
I'm not going to hold my breath on that one. Just, I don't know, call me skeptical. But that would be great. I would love to see the end of Citizens United. Corporations are not people, and money isn't speech. That whole thing is a mess. But again, I find it hard to believe that many Republicans are going to say, yeah, this is wrong, we shouldn't do that. Even though I do think that the election of Susan Crawford over the Elon Musk pick was pretty indicative of where Wisconsin is across all party lines. Wisconsinites banded together in rejecting Elon Musk coming in and trying to buy it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the universality of that. People don't like cheats. And the minutia of that, none of us like cheats. Republicans talk about people cheating on public benefits. Democrats talk about people cheating by billionaires not paying their taxes. Can we just focus on the fact that we all think cheating is bad and find some pathway to doing something?
I would even take it one step further, showing the severe nature of Wisconsin's stubbornness, if you will, is that all of the politicians, the candidates who tried to run for governor or Senate, who were millionaire, multimillionaire billionaires, saying, oh, it's my turn, it's my time, that's my job, I'd like that. We're like, no, I might not like the Democrats or the Republicans, but we're not going to take the person who just thinks they're owed the job. Wisconsinites are smarter than that, and they don't like cheats, and they don't like carpetbaggers.
Yeah, Wisconsinites are workers. Yeah. Honestly, I think that's why I get a lot of across-the-board support. People know I'm going to work my butt off for them. I mean, I'm a regular person. I have a part-time job as a server. I work at a garden center in the spring. You know, people know that they might not agree with my positions, but I'm going to dig down and I'm going to work for them.
Representative, we've only got about a minute and a half left. I'm just curious, when you were considering running, was the issue of money something that could have stopped you from running? Because you have to raise so much cash now.
Yeah. You know, every single candidate, Republican and Democrat alike, complain about the amount of time we have to spend on the phone dialing for dollars. Just think about spending that time door to door talking to people individually. None of us really want that. Unfortunately, that's the system it's in. But now that I'm in the system and I'm on campaigns and elections, I feel there's an opportunity to change it. I just need some partners to come with me and do it.
I think you would get a whole lot of support, again, getting rid of Citizens United and having set amounts depending upon what race you are running in. Here's your money. Let's see how far you can make it go. I think that's a great idea. Yeah. Don't stop. Representative Lee Snodgrass has been our guest. Thank you so very, very much for your time, Representative. We really appreciate it.
It's so nice to join you. Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to have a little weather and wine with Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot. That is on the way. Stay close. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Matt and Air on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. Eagle 1490 AM.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. On April 22nd, in the Wisconsin State Senate, something happened that you don't see too often. A high-profile bill passed with overwhelming bipartisan support. The Republican-controlled chamber voted 32-1 to extend Medicaid coverage for new moms from 60 days to 12 months. Wisconsin is one of only two U.S. states that has not already extended this critical postpartum coverage. So with that kind of support, you'd expect the bill to pass, right? Well, Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has repeatedly blocked this legislation from coming up for a vote. Several Republican state representatives have been speaking out on this, urging Voss to change his tune, but he has not yet budged. It's time for Voss to end this charade and allow this bill to come up for a vote. If he's opposed, he can still vote against it. But one person should not block a bill that has already been supported by the majority of his own party. Let the people vote, Mr. Speaker.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation area.
You're listening to the Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, it's time to hit the books. We go to the Chad Holmes Show up in Wausau, and this week he was joined by Robin Vargas of the Marathon County Public Library. She talks about what's going on at the local library this month.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, April the 22nd of 2025. The time is 9:07. Currently 46 degrees in downtown Wausau at our WXCO studios at the corner of Washington and North 3rd Street downtown. I am Chad Holmes, and it is the Chad Holmes Show, the final edition under this umbrella. But as I've said, not going anywhere. We're still going to be part of the morning show with Pat Kreitlow. We'll have local segments within our Pat Kreitlow program that starts tomorrow morning from 6 until 9 a.m. and then from 9 to 11, Matt and Air on Air. But as we do every other week, we get a chance to talk to Robin Vargas from the Marathon County Public Library. And Robin, good morning.
Good morning, Chad.
Absolutely. We're into the, I mean, it hasn't really felt like it. It's still been too cold to be called spring.
But yeah.
Doggone it. It's late April. We got to start turning things around. But there's one thing we can always count on is a lot of great activities at the Marathon County Public Library. How have things been going generally? Has it been pretty busy over there?
Things have been great. So last Saturday, I wanted to mention this. I had brought it up a couple weeks ago, our sourdough starter program that we were having at the library. That occurred last Saturday, I believe. Maybe 2 weeks ago. I can't remember anymore. The point is, we had about 150 people show up for this event.
Wow.
It was amazing. It was a packed house. We just couldn't believe it. Every single chair in the room we had pulled out, and we still had people standing in the back waiting to hear about sourdough and wanting to learn more about it. And so we will be offering that one again in June. We heard the demand for it. But yeah, it was just amazing to see that many people and get them on into the library.
That must be an amazing feeling when you have an event and, you know, you're hoping that it goes well and you hope that a lot of folks will stop on by. And when they just keep coming and they keep coming and they keep coming, I imagine that it just, in some ways, it makes everything a little bit more worthwhile. Obviously, you have great satisfaction of what you do at the library. But man, when you have something that just kind of blows you away, that must be very special.
Yeah, absolutely. And believe it or not, it was our event coordinator's first event at the library. And this is just something that she knows a lot about. She's passionate about sourdough, has a lot of knowledge. And she actually is a former teacher. And so she can present well in front of large groups of people. And so it was just, she did amazing. And it was, just really great to see that many people come out. So
it sounds like now a high bar for the future.
Yeah, well.
If she's for one here, it's going to be very, very difficult now to top, and when you're packing in the entire room like that. But and again, it just shows that when you do, I mean, sometimes when you think about, sourdough. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, but sometimes you don't know what just connects, right? I mean, and that's probably part of the fun is to, sometimes you'll have these ideas that may seem a little bit off the wall, but then it'll work. Maybe sometimes it won't work, but at the same time, you get great opportunities to try to bring maybe different things to the folks here in Central Wisconsin.
Exactly, yeah.
Again, we're talking to Robin Vargas from the Marathon County Public Library here on 98.9 WXCO. Well, let's look ahead. Obviously, things are always coming, and I'm sure there are things coming both to the main branch here in downtown Wausau and then all the other branches around the county.
Yeah, so here at Wausau coming up this Saturday, at our Wausau headquarters, April 26th, we have Plarn cording and macrame. Have you ever heard of Plarn, Chad?
I was going to try not to look like I was completely clueless about it, but I can say that I have never heard of that.
I don't think I had before either, to be honest. A new word for our vocabulary, but it's plastic yarn. And so we are making that out of plastic grocery bags. So I'm sure everyone's got their own stockpile of grocery bags at home that you save for whatever reason, but if you have too many, we're going to take those, and it's some kind of knitting that involves the plastic bags going into making the plarn. But we'll show you how, and then we will take that plarn and use it to make either a macrame air plant hanger or a water bottle holder. And we will be providing the air plants. So come on down. You'll learn how to plarn, get rid of those plastic bags, make an air plant holder, and get a new plant for your house. So
very cool.
Win-win all around.
When again is that?
That's this Saturday, April 26th at 2:30.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. What else is on the list here? Because you always have such a long list of great stuff to talk about.
I try to include it all, and we never have enough time.
I know.
But But
we try.
Yes, we sure do. We'll jump ahead to the branches a little bit. Out in Spencer this week, they've got a couple happening. So tomorrow, April 23rd, they have a What's Happening in Spencer is the title of the program. So it's the police chief and the Spencer Village Administrator are coming and giving a talk, kind of just giving some updates on what's been happening in the community, some things that are, you know, what's to come, and have some time to answer questions from the audience. So if you're, you know, in that area and want to know what's going on, head there on Wednesday. On Friday in Spencer, they have a spring handbell concert. So the Spencer High School, they have two groups of handbell ensembles, and they'll be performing at our Spencer location Friday, April 25th at 10:30. So free concert, all ages, come on down. And then hopping ahead to the next week, Monday, April 28th, they are having a card-making event for the Honor Flight. So upcoming Honor Flight, they'll be making some thank you cards. That's Monday, April 28th from 3 to 6. If you can't make that one, we're also having it in Stratford the following day, April 29th from 3 to 6.
Sounds like Spencer's got it going on.
They've got a lot happening lately.
And that's, again, one of the cool aspects that about your programming. You do bring it to the people.
Exactly.
Right, throughout the country, throughout the county. You don't have to come from Spencer all the way here to Wausau or something like that.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Head to your own local branch.
Exactly right. And I know that there's other activities going on as well.
Yeah, out in Rothschild on May 1st, they have a presentation that I'm actually pretty interested in. And now that I look at it, I'm out of town that day, so I can't make it. It's a bummer.
Geez.
But it's called Van Life, and it's all about the people choosing to live life out on the road in their van and how to do that, you know, how to maybe convert your van into your own tiny home and some of the joys and challenges of living life on the road. And so it sounds pretty interesting. And that one's at 5:30 on May 1st at Rothschild.
Man, even if you're not interested in living life on the road, it'd be very interesting to hear about the life that it is.
But some other experiences.
I mean, again, that's one of the things about the library generally, is you can find out about things that maybe you have not experienced yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether it's through the power of books or whether it's through the power of an event like that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
And what else before we got about 2 minutes to go? Make sure we hit on the important things before we wrap it up.
Yeah, we'll bounce over to Mosinee Monday, April 28th. They have a computer basics class on using the internet. So if you have maybe some family members in your life who are not there yet and need a little help, come on down to Mosinee. We do ask that you register for that one. You can just give the Mosinee branch a call. But that one will be a really big help. I know I heard at least one or two patrons here in Wausau in the last couple of weeks. My desk happens to be pretty close to the reference desk, and so I overhear things occasionally. But I heard an older patron say, I really need some help using a computer, and didn't really know where to start. And we said, you know, we can give you some basics, but here's this class as well that'll be a really good tool for you to have and to be able to learn from that.
And that's so wonderful, because sometimes when you think, well, everybody knows this but me, and it can be sometimes hard to even come up to a reference desk
exactly.
like that.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Again, that's a really cool aspect of what you guys do at the library as well. In our last minute, make sure we hit on what else is happening.
Edgar, tomorrow, April 23rd, from 4 to 5:30, they're making some felt flower decor. So if you're feeling crafty, head on over to Edgar. And then we'll hop forward to next weekend at our Wausau headquarters. We've got two events on Saturday, May 3rd. In the morning for kids, we have a migratory bird celebration from 9:30 to 11. We're going to have some special guests from the Wausau Bird Club come on down to teach us and, you know, have some hands-on crafts and games and things like that. So that'll be fun. And then from starting at 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., we have Marathon County Family Trivia. So trivia all about Marathon County. Maybe what was Wausau's original name? What popular cheese was invented in Marathon County? I don't know.
Gonna wrap it up right there.
All right.
MCPL.us and follow on Facebook.
That's right.
Robin, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Sounds good. Thank you.
To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. People from all over the world have come to Rome for today's Pope Francis funeral and procession are talking about their new lifetime memories.
A momentous occasion, absolutely fabulous that I'm here, and one I can remember forever and ever, and I have goosebumps.
Pope Francis recently said the war in Gaza created a deplorable humanitarian situation. In Gaza, because of an Israeli blockade, some children only have one meal a day, says the World Food Program's Gaza Gaza Emergency Coordinator Yasmin Meydani.
Without aid coming in, without the borders opening, it means that not just the food security, but the medical supplies, the shelter supplies, everything else that a person needs to have a dignified life and a dignified assistance is being impacted severely.
Talks about Iran's nuclear program today in Oman went well, say reps of the U.S. and Iran. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Packers pick another receiver. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports in Green Bay, where it's day three of the NFL draft wrapping up today. Last night, the Packers added two more players, an offensive lineman from NC State, Anthony Belton, 6'6", 336 pounds, and a 6'4" wide receiver from TCU, Savion Williams. I asked Williams why his college coach had him line up in the Wildcat, run options, and even threw a touchdown.
I played quarterback in high school. I played quarterback my whole life. So I think them moving me in the backfield, doing all that, I think that just came from that, just having the ball in my hand right now and just moving around and doing things like that.
Baseball. Brewers and the Cardinals playing again in St. Louis. Last night, the Crew losing 3-2. NBA playoffs. The Bucks with a win over the Pacers in Milwaukee, 117-101.
I think tonight it was like we came with the right mentality. You know, collectively, everybody was up and into the ball. We didn't just let things happen.
That's the Bucks' day. Damian Lillard with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy for tonight, to few showers and thunderstorms and lows in the mid-40s. Couple of raindrops tomorrow morning and again tomorrow evening. Mostly cloudy otherwise and a high in the mid-60s. More storms for Monday, severe weather possible.
Currently at 62 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. President Donald Trump launched a cryptocurrency meme coin with his likeness on January 17th, just before Inauguration Day. April 21st, with its value plummeting, the company offered top buyers of the coin a dinner with Trump and a personal tour of the White House. That likely violates the Emoluments Clause. The website for the meme coin loudly promotes a dinner with Trump at his Washington Golf Club for the top 220 owners of the coin, and for the top 25 owners, an exclusive reception and special VIP tour. But as of April 24th, any reference to touring the White House was scrubbed from the site. With the value having fallen from $74 to a low of $7.66 on April 17th, the price jumped after the announcement to $14.54 on April 23rd. But it's not the price of the coin that should worry Americans, but that corporations, special interests, or foreign governments could exploit the offer as an opportunity to channel money to the notoriously transactional Trump in exchange for access and favors. Jordan Leibowitz of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington told Mother Jones magazine, "This is about as unethical as you can get, essentially selling off access to the president," unquote. We have a pre-scrubbing graphic and more on the Emoluments Clause at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal. Find us on Blue Sky at Democracy Minute.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Ross calling in.
Thanks for your show. I'm just wondering if we're watching or witnessing a legal system that where what we thought was precedent is now going to be sort of cast away.
The reality is the question that you raise about the future and what are the implications when, in fact, the things we understood always to be bedrocks of our community, of our nation, are no longer that.
Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Civic Media.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We return you now to the Civic Media Spotlight, and up next we'll hear a segment from Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Tenzin and Stacy Botsford are farmers in Marathon County who have done everything right, growing a variety of vegetables and fruits that can be found at farmers markets, local restaurants, schools, and food pantries. But the Trump-Musk budget axe is coming down on the Local Food Purchase Assistance Cooperative Agreement program, which buys food from local farms like the Botsfords. We find out how they're dealing with cuts to the program.
More from Paul Carrick, the birthday boy, turning 74 today here on Up North News Radio, which is Up North News Radio for one more day. Starting tomorrow, we get a new name, we get a new time. Still 6 a.m., but instead of 6 to 8, it'll be 6 to 9 as part of a whole new lineup of shows starting tomorrow here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Some things are going to change. For example, Joe Zepecki is often heard here on Thursday mornings at 6:30. We'll hear him at 8:30 instead. Tomorrow in our 8 a.m., our new 8 a.m. hour, we'll be talking to William Garcia, who, like Joe Zepecki, is a candidate for state superintendent of public, state chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. You see, these campaigns, these elections, they last so long that you're still stuck in some of the old ways. No, they're running for state chair of the state Democratic Party. That'll be William Garcia tomorrow, Joe Zepecki on Thursday, and we're nailing down a date with Devin Remiker, one of the other candidates for state party chair, to get him in. New guests, Kristen Lyerly, who has been here Monday mornings at 6:30, is going to add a visit Friday mornings at 8 a.m. We'll still have our regular weekend review panel on Friday mornings at 7:20. And here's something else that isn't going to change. Every other Tuesday or so at 7:30, you're going to see the bright, smiley face of Hans Brighton Moser, a dairy farmer from up in the Merrill area, helping to introduce us to issues that are important to the entire state from a rural and an agricultural perspective. Hans, you are a rock of the lineup. Thank you for continuing to put up with us every couple of weeks or so. How are you doing up there?
Happy to do so. And the intro music, I thought this was an allusion to, you know, if there's ever going to be a farm bill.
It could have been. It really could have been. We're still waiting on that, however many years now that it appears to be overdue. But and yet, in the meantime, lacking a farm bill, there's still ways that, you know, this Congress and this administration can have an impact on farming, positive or negative. And it appears we're just going for the negative here in the slash into a particular program. So, Hans, why don't you introduce the guest you brought along today, and then we'll talk about the particular program that's being cut.
Well, our guest today is my dear friend Tenzin Botsford from Red Door Family Farm over in Athens, and I'll let him introduce himself.
Tenzin, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Pat. Good to see you, Hans.
Tell us more about Red Door.
We're an organic vegetable farm in northwest corner of Marathon County in Athens here. We grow about 10 acres of diversified vegetable crops. We sell at the Wausau Farmers Market. We sell the Saturday Market specifically. We sell to a variety of restaurants and grocery stores and things of that nature. Then we also have our CSA program, which is sort of a subscription service. People sign up at the beginning of the season to get weekly deliveries throughout the growing season. And we deliver those in Wausau, Marshfield, and points between here on the farm. And we've been here for starting our 11th season.
And look, let's get into this particular program that's being cut because, Hans, these things are not cuts that are like going to save money. This isn't money that's going back into farmers' pockets. So when you wanted to approach the idea of a segment about the local food purchase assistance cooperative agreement program, again, folks don't necessarily know much about it, but it is definitely a program that brings value to family farms and what pantries and school districts all across the state, right?
Absolutely. And again, Tenzin can explain way more about this than I can, but just speaking broadly, it's a means by which local food can get to local people. And, you know, you talked about it earlier in the show when you were talking about this segment in between renditions of the Wichita Lineman, I think it was. The importance of being able to have local food get to local people. I mean, it reduces our dependence on, farmers' way, you know, in other areas. It reduces our dependence on sort of corporate ag. It reduces our dependence on, you know, the Walmarts of the world. And it's good for local economies, because Tenzin and I can speak to this all day long. Give a farmer a buck, I'm going to tell you right now, it is not going under his mattress. It is going straight back into the community. So those dollars bounce around when farmers get a hold of them briefly. And if we can kill two birds with one stone and get food to local pantries and schools and so forth, this seems like a win-win.
So Tenzin, talk about the value of it from your standpoint individually, but also from, you know, from a community standpoint, and why this is a good investment of taxpayer funds.
Absolutely. It was one of the highlights really of our farm, getting to participate in this program. Basically the way it works, and it kind of went through a few iterations, but it was either giving food directly to pantries or hunger relief organizations, or giving food directly to farmers to be used to purchase food. So in our case, the first couple of years, we would receive essentially a grant for the deliverables of X amount of product up to that dollar value. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a handout. It was just, they were essentially purchasing food, and they had set rates for different products and that sort of thing. And then the only cap on there was that we had to communicate with the hunger relief organizations that we were paired up with, to ensure that they were wanting that amount of food at that time, so that there wasn't piling up or jumbling up. So make sure that that was flowing through and getting to people who need that food in our community right away.
What was that part, you know, that partnership like, when you're having to communicate, you know, with the community? Did it help you as a local food producer feel like you were more a part of the community, more integral, being able to provide this locally grown produce?
Yeah, absolutely. It was lovely working with the pantries. We worked primarily with Hunger Coalition of Marathon County, which is under the United Way umbrella. And then we would deliver directly to the neighbor's place in Wausau. And both of those are organizations that we have worked closely with in the past on other projects. And so that was really easy. We have easy communication there, because we were already kind of focusing on that with our farm before this came up. And this came up as a way to just really bolster and blossom that work that we were doing. And made it a lot easier to add on little bits of other things too. So that worked really well. It put a lot of food from our farm and almost 300 other Wisconsin farms into the hands of pantries and other hunger relief organizations. That food was in high demand. I think there's often a misconception that what people need is really easy shelf stable food, but the reality is that the nutrient density and the quality of that produce is one of the things that are the most often missing, and one of the things that really can help get people back on their feet. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this program worked really well that way, and it opened up lines of communications. And part of the idea was for farms and hunger relief agencies programs to work together and really get those lines of communication open, making that sort of stuff happen. There's another program, Local Food to Schools, that has suffered a similar fate. And we've had, you know, back during the pandemic, we had schools reaching out to us saying, hey, Cisco won't show up anymore because they've got too many drivers out sick or whatever the case may be. But we still have a need. Can we get food? And the way our operation works is we're on very thin margins, and we plant to an end. You know, we deliver directly to our customers, and so we don't plant something until it has a place to go. So that doesn't work. We don't have a lot of extra things on hand. We plant for the markets that we have.
So for those who aren't, shall we say, knowledgeable about this and see it as, you know, some kind of a handout, your business model does not depend upon, you know, those particular programs, but they do help augment not only your operation, but again, keeps dollars in the local economy.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, I would say our business doesn't depend on it, but it was a significant portion of our income over the last couple of years, and it's sorely missed. And having the rug just kind of yanked out from it, from underneath, we already had seeds started. We already had our crop plan in place. We already have our staff hired for the year, planning on that money, which was already agreed to and arranged and set up.
And that's the thing that I think is especially galling to a lot of folks is, look, you can make the case if you want that this program should not continue. Fine. In the next budget, it will not continue. But to have made a contract and then to yank it out for, you know, for no non-emergency reason whatsoever, this breaking of a contract, you can see why there's global instability now about the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Hans, when it can't keep its word and does this to its own farmers, it's very understandable why there is a certain skittishness about anything that this administration might say to folks, farmers or otherwise.
Yeah, there's no excuse for it. There's no excuse for it, Pat. And this impacts not just the farmers who are on the other ends of those contracts. And it impacts their lenders. And as I said earlier, it impacts everybody in the community because those dollars don't get shoved under the mattress. They get moved around. So, you know, you're talking local credit unions who are being impacted and so forth. And then just the, you said it, the full faith of the government, you know, there was a time when any lender and any farmer said, well, you can complain about the government, but by God, if I write my signature on a contract, I'm going to get exactly what the contract says. And everybody felt comfortable that was the case. That comfort is gone. And I don't know, it's, you know, hopefully we can get that back again in the future. But right now, it's just not a guarantee the way it used to be.
No, it's not. And when, you know, again, that's going to make it hard, you know, for whoever the next president is, whoever comes in next, to make the case that, you know, that what they're doing is they're living up to the old joke, you know, trust me, I'm from the government, I'm from the government here to help you, which was always kind of an old saw, but now it's become a self-fulfilling prophecy with these folks. Tenzin, I can't ask you to speak for, you know, the schools or for the food pantries necessarily, but I figure you can give a pretty educated answer. You've talked about the impact for you as a producer, but what does it mean as well now that these local school cafeterias and these local food pantries can't necessarily be assured of getting local food? They have to rely on, you know, big producers and big semis and things like that, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, I happen to know that demand is still increasing in the Wausau area. I can speak to that. I know that there are, you know, double digits new people signing up each day that the neighbor's place is open. Brand new accounts, people who haven't been in there before. And that's just right in our little community here. So demand is continuing to go up. People are in need of food. They're in need of the high quality food. And by the time that a person is needing to reach out and jump through the hoops to get food from these different organizations, they don't really have weeks and months worth of reserves to fall back on. And this sort of interruption really, really presents a challenge to the people who were counting on this food. And the TFAP supplies, which is where they get most of their sort of federal food deliveries to hunger relief organizations, those are down as well. So those have dropped off 50% here in the past year. So they're really scrambling. They're looking for food, and they have a lot of people who need it.
A very unstable situation here, but we appreciate you telling us about it. Hope that folks will see how they can help support Red Door Family Farm, Tenzin Botsford, and of course, Hans Breitenmoser. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for all you do. Take care. We'll talk again soon. All right. When we come back, we will talk to Chad Holmes about his show coming up next on 98.9 WXCL. You're up north.
To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Every year, millions of pets go missing, leaving families heartbroken. If you lose or find a pet, Love Lost is here to help. Our free, easy-to-use platform uses photo-matching technology across multiple media platforms to bring lost pets home. Just upload a photo and quickly search the largest national lost and found pet database. Let's unite to reunite, because every lost pet deserves to find their way home. Register today at lovelost.com.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Check out my war plans. Pete Hegseth talking about first big strike against the Houthis in Yemen on Signal, two separate channels. Yes, the one you heard about before with the reporter on it. Oops-a-daisy. And now also his wife, his bro, and his lawyer who magically got hired by the Pentagon. This guy's judgment could not be worse. Do you think Hegseth should probably resign?
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to the Talk of LaCrosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Closing out this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we head down to Madison for the John and Gordy Show. John and Gordy spoke with former Madison Mayor Paul Soglin, discussing academic freedom and how Harvard is now fighting back against the Trump administration's attacks on the pursuit of knowledge.
WMDX 92.7, John and Gordy in the morning, for now anyway.
Yeah, cloudy, rainy, and temperatures going to be dropping from highs in the low to mid-50s this morning into the 40s this afternoon. Joining us now, former Madison Mayor Paul Soglin. Good morning, Paul.
Morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Windy.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange day today, but it's going to be warm, and we're finally getting the temperatures that I've been asking for a long time.
Well, later in the week.
See, we know somebody in the weather, and that's what's helped.
There you go.
Okay. All right. It's who you know. Mm-hmm. Hey, we want to get your input on what's going on at all the universities across the country right now being threatened by the Trump administration to do and say what they want them to say. And the UW hasn't said anything about what they're going to do yet, but we know that Harvard is leading the class on this thing. They're going to challenge the Trump administration. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, simply put, good for Harvard. I jokingly posted the other day an observation I made back in 79 when I was a fellow at Harvard, which is Harvard is 350 years old. Harvard is older than the government of the United States, and in some cases more powerful. Hmm. And hopefully this is one of those instances where it's more powerful. Clearly, academic freedom. Universities are very messy places, and they're deliberately designed to be that way in the sense that you don't have rigid controls over who does what, who says what. Universities, unlike private businesses, for example, a private business, every department, every arm of a private business is aligned with the mission of the company. In universities, every department, and within every department, there's a tremendous amount of autonomy, a tremendous amount of independence, and there's a reason for that. And that is to encourage the research, to encourage the study, the developments and understanding of who and what we are as humans, as a planet. And it affects the sciences, the social sciences, studies in language. But in any case, I think it's really critical to understand that not only do we have these immediate threats, which, for example, involve students here who are visas? But this Trump attack on the University of Wisconsin, on Harvard, is going to do everything from thwart development in genetic research, in mm-hmm. dealing with crop disease, in dealing with climate change. I mean, there isn't an aspect of our lives where this isn't going to have an impact.
That's right. Almost delayed impact because, you know, something like this can affect what, you know, is developed in science, the advancement of what we can do to help other people and crops and diseases. All of this is just put – it's actually just – you know, in Japan, they had like a lost decade. Remember that big story? It seems like we're setting ourselves up for a lost decade as well because of all these delays, all these cuts that they're making are just going to delay progress in this country for another 10 years.
Well, I think it's a real interesting observation on your part because one of the advantages of this kind of attack, the negative impacts won't be seen for 4, 5, 8, 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so consequently, in a way, Trump can get away with this until people see and feel the real consequences, whether it's, I mean, the most obvious right now is disease controls in terms of another epidemic, whether it be a variant of COVID or some new disease we've never experienced that through mutation emerges, whether it's in the human population or the animal population. But the long-term consequences of this are really grave. And it's already had long-term consequences by disrupting research work that was already underway. And the point was made last night in one of the television news stories I was watching. These researchers who are determined to make the world a better place, they're going to leave the United States. And so you've got this contradiction where Trump is complaining about the loss of intellectual property to China and other nations. Well, he's driving folks out of this country.
Yeah.
And this research and work will be done elsewhere, hopefully, if we can't roll back his attacks on academic freedom.
That's right. Yeah,
we could be seeing a brain drain here.
There's one other little aspect of this that we should mention. The Trump administration has said that the letter that prompted all this, the letter from Trump's administration to Harvard, was sent out in error.
Oh.
Oops.
This is real interesting. This is a real example of blaming the victim.
Yeah.
So after these conversations take place between Harvard and the government about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, after all that takes place, what happens is the Trump administration drafts this letter, which was sent to Harvard. Now they're saying it was drafted by a committee which was not given final approval to send the letter. And what's really interesting here is a woman who speaks for the Trump administration on its attack on DEI says Harvard overreacted, that they didn't do the polite thing of first having received the letter calling to see whether or not it was real.
No.
Instead, they pulled out the guns and they just flatly stood up to the Trump administration. And so now they're blaming the whole thing on Harvard.
Wow,
man. You know, it's like, you know, we put a gun in your face and you decided to resist, and that's your fault.
Unbelievable.
So it'll be interesting this coming days to see whether or not the Trump administration backs off and says, oh, we really didn't mean it.
Yeah.
Paul?
Paul,
it's great to talk to you as always. We appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Hey. I can see why you're grouchy sometimes, Paul.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's former Madison Mayor Paul Soglin. Back in a moment with more of John and Gordy.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Maggie Dawn.
Tom Paulsiewicz joins me in the guest host seat. We dig into Judge Hannah Dugan's arrest. What is going on here?
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
David Hogg, Democratic National Committee Vice Chair, says, no, we're going to spend $20 million to take out fellow Democrats who are either too old or not voting progressive enough. And Republicans are doing this as well. They don't want any compromise, zero-sum game. I spent 30 years in politics. The best politics are pragmatic. You get 75% of the loaf and you move on.
Catch The Todd Allbaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Pope Francis has been laid to rest at the Papal Basilica of St. Mary Major, the first pope to be buried there in nearly 400 years. The solemn funeral mass for Pope Francis drawing at least 250,000 people, including this mourner.
A momentous occasion, absolutely fabulous that I'm here, and one I can remember forever and ever, and I have goosebumps.
Before the funeral, President Trump met with Ukraine's President Zelensky in St. Peter's Basilica, a big difference from their heated February face-to-face in the Oval Office. This time, Zelensky saying it was
positive, Paris and London, and we want to continue such meetings to bring peace to Ukraine.
Trump posted on social media he thinks maybe Russia's Putin doesn't want to stop the war and that he may have to deal with the Russian president differently. A massive explosion at a port in southern Iran has left at least 5 dead and more than 700 hurt, says Iran state media. This is ABC News. If you're traveling any